going to talk more about shift over to adults, and we're going to hear from Joe Bricato. Dr. Bricato will talk with us about drug treatment utilization among adults receiving HIV prevention in LA County. She's an assistant professor at Florida International University and teaches at California State University and is also a licensed clinical social worker. Oh, hang on. It's moving by itself. Okay. I don't think I touched anything. Sorry. She teaches substance use disorder assessment and treatment, research and practice courses. And prior to teaching, she developed and administered programs for HIV prevention and testing, substance use, and mental health disorders in culturally diverse South Florida. So with that, I think you just have to watch the slides. They are moving on their own.
Okay. Magic slides. Hi, good morning. You know, our national strategy to reduce new HIV infections is calling for an intensification of prevention efforts in communities where the risks are most heavily concentrated, and the problematic use of illicit drugs cuts across the stratus of race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, and HIV status and forms a highly stigmatized cluster that continues to be a difficult to reach population. In 2010, what we know is that 22.5 million folks used illicit drugs over the age of 12, used illicit drugs at least on a monthly basis. And subsets of this population were using it problematically. And those that used more frequently and more problematically were addicted users and folks that were on the continuum of risk, at the high end of the continuum of risk. They had increased or elevated risks for contracting HIV and certainly other sexually transmitted infections. Now, of these folks that meet the diagnostic criteria for a substance use disorder, less than 10% are actually receiving treatment for drug use. And in California, those numbers are just a little bit higher, with 91% unmet need. 50% of the individuals, as you heard earlier, living with the virus are also illicit substance users. And I think only 3% of those living with the virus that also use illicit drugs are going to live to be 65, which is a real important piece to talk about here. Now, of course, there's considerable evidence that getting treatment for drug use reduces the risk behaviors, and particularly if we treat it early enough. Now, when we look at the studies of what is predicted treatment utilization, what we found is some contradictions in the research, and some studies find that blacks and Hispanics are more likely than whites to access drug use treatment, and others found that they were less likely. But one of the things we have to know is that ethnic and racial minorities are overrepresented in those populations that are mandated to care. And so among publicly funded treatment centers, you're going to find that their proportion is higher, simply because they've been mandated. Among males, of course, lifetime crack use, less education, high school education or less, certainly arrests were predictors. among women, health issues, homelessness were found to be predictors. And not a lot of studies look at sexual orientation. That's not a question they ask. But of those that do, what they found was that lesbian and bisexual women were more likely to access care than heterosexual men. Among Latinos specifically, older age, lower education, and drug injectors were more likely to access drug treatment. The least likely were females, folks between 18 and 25, those over 65 years of age. And for this study, the theoretical framework that we utilized was the behavioral model for vulnerable populations. And this has predisposing, enabling, and need factors. And it not only looks at individual factors, but also contextual factors. And with vulnerable populations, I mean, certainly drug users, those with HIV, are vulnerable populations, stigmatized, exposed to discrimination, inequalities, marginalization, all of those things that diminish their capacity to access care. The countywide risk assessment survey was the data that was used for this, and that was drawn from 51 HIV prevention contracted agencies in Los Angeles County. The staff were trained, 220 staff were trained in research protocols. They conducted in-person interviews, solicited informed consents from over 2,000 respondents. This particular study, the data I analyzed here and that we looked at was a bit smaller sample, just over 1,000, who reported using at least one or more illicit drugs. Those that used alcohol only were not included. Those that were in a sheltered environment like residential treatment or halfway houses, sober living, those were not included in the sample as well. Try to get a non-clinical sample, if at all possible, out of this kind of quasi community model. And certainly, using the variables that were informed by prior research and creating some drug risk scales and looking at all the services they accessed. By varied analysis, looked at association between drug users who accessed treatment and those that didn't, and a multivariate logistic regression model using drug treatment access was conducted for this. As you can see from our demographics, there's a pretty equal distribution there, with slightly more Latinos in the sample, but no significant differences there. Of course, a greater number did not access treatment. The demographics by gender, as you can see, a greater percentage of females in this sample were in treatment than were not in treatment, but males, of course, is the largest percentage. In terms of sexual orientation, heterosexuals were the largest percentage of folks that accessed treatment. And the age is particularly important to look at here. As you can see, it's the age range is quite a bit older of those that access treatment. We're talking about folks in their mid to late 40s were the folks that primarily were accessing treatment. The drugs they used, those that accessed treatment, of course, greater percentages used both opiates, heroin, cocaine, crack cocaine, and methamphetamine. Marijuana use was high among both groups, but as you can see, those not accessing treatment, a greater percentage of those with marijuana. Now, as a proxy for potentially problematic drug use, using four or more drugs not including alcohol, in the last 6 months was the proxy that we used in this study. And those that accessed treatment were certainly a greater percentage of those were likely to use four more drugs. They were also more likely to have concurrent sex partners, meaning they had a main partner and a casual partner within the last 6 months. Those that accessed needle exchange were also a greater percentage also accessed treatment. Those that were tested for HIV were also a greater percentage accessed treatment. And those that reported being HIV positive, a greater percentage of those also accessed treatment. The number of sex partners, because there were sex traders and sex workers in the sample, as you can see, the standard deviations are quite large, and so the medians are reported. Slightly more sex partners for those who did not access treatment, but the mode for both of these populations was zero. Oops. And the drug risk scale, this is primarily those that had injected drug use, had used injection drugs in the last 6 months, and they were asked eight drug risk questions. Certainly quite common questions that were used. And those that accessed treatment, as you can see, scored significantly higher. The logistic model, as it looks in terms of behavioral risks and the behavioral health, is that older age increases the odds every 5 years, increases the odds. There's less likely if you're gay, lesbian, or bisexual to access treatment than if you're heterosexual. And of course, less than a high school education is more likely, more than a high school education, less likely. Enabling factors, those folks that had been treated for an STI were more likely to access care. Those involved with HIV social support were more likely. And HIV testing, the odds were greater. With child welfare, which is a mandated category, those involved with child welfare services were much more likely to access treatment. And those who accessed treatment were more likely to have concurrent sex partners. In terms of need, having mental health problems, and here accessing mental health service was used for a proxy for a mental health problem. And you know that can go either way. That can go as an enabling factor of accessing the mental health care, or it could be a need factor. In this model, I conceptualized it here as a need factor. Heroin use, crack use, and methamphetamine use were all, the use of those were associated with a greater likelihood of accessing treatment. And so if we look here at the behavioral model for vulnerable populations and alcohol and drug treatment utilization, we can see that the age, education, and sexual orientation were certainly predisposing factors supported by the model. The use of social services and risk behaviors, and in terms of risk behaviors, having concurrent relationships was the risk behavior here. And also, I want to take you back here to being treated for a sexually transmitted infection. And then, of course, the need factors, problematic drug use, and mental health issues were all factors that were associated with alcohol and drug use treatment utilization. So as we've said, those who accessed treatment scored higher on injection drug use, injection drug risks, and the good news is that accessing treatment was also associated with needle exchange. There was no difference in the number of sex partners. Those accessing treatment were more likely to have concurrent sexual partnerships. There are strengths and limitations to the study, of course, it's secondary data, so that required the use of proxy measures and creating some index scales. There was no criminal justice variables, and that was a severe limitation because I think that would have really been an important factor to include here. It was cross-sectional, so there's no temporal aspect of events. There's no way of knowing at what point in time or even what type of treatment folks accessed other than needle exchange. And of course, it's not generalizable to all drug users because these folks were, of course, also receiving services, other types of services, at agencies that were contracted to provide HIV prevention services. The large sample size was certainly a strength, and that it was a community sample, and that it looked at local population and local providers. I think that's really important. We get lost in national studies. Need, of course, was the overall factor in treatment utilization. And there's some implications that can be drawn from this study. I mean, the fact that those who had been treated for STIs were more likely, the odds were greater that they would access treatment, probably means that screening for STIs in drug and alcohol programs is going to be a real important piece. Prevention focused on more than just multiple partners, but sexual networks and concurrent relationships, particularly among those that are already accessing treatment, is going to be important. And looking at the age range, and while we don't know from our study whether or not this is the first time, second, or third time folks have accessed treatment, what we're seeing is an older population. And while it's not shown here, African Americans were the oldest of the population that were being served by programs. So earlier intervention using lower threshold models, perhaps CBERT or ASSIST, or brief interventions at an earlier stage, and of course triangulating the integration of services so that there's a single point of access. Among this sample, there were folks that got integrated services, but that was small. And while a greater number in this sample, probably a third, accessed drug and alcohol treatment, that still means two-thirds did not. Two-thirds that were likely problematic drug users did not access care. So those are important things to look at. Now, we wanted to look at factors associated with accessing treatment services, and we wanted to look at how this model fit with that. And some of the social construction regarding enabling factors and certainly the discrimination factors are things that we just haven't, we didn't have the variables that were available to look at things like stigma and stigma management and how that affects utilizing care. Certainly, longitudinally, it would be a good idea to see how this works over time. And integrating the services would be a really grand idea here. And it would reduce stigma, I think, to have services integrated with primary care, both HIV services and alcohol and drug use treatment services. But a lower threshold has to be there if we're going to intervene earlier. Part of the fact that these are an older population, we can look at this, and I mean, we don't have the data here to support this, but what we're seeing is that folks start using drugs quite early. I mean, you know, it's an adolescent disorder. And if they're in their 40s, late 30s and early 40s, before they're accessing care, the risks are significantly higher at that point in time. So with lower thresholds, we may be able to intervene and reduce the risks earlier. And I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We hear a lot of talk with integration on health reform, and we're all, I think, banking on bringing all our services together. So hopefully that's going to happen. I've run a drug treatment center and tried to integrate all that with no money. It's a nice thing to do, but it's hard.